think I've finally discovered why Rorschach resents me so very much. He does not believe that an outsider such as myself, a foreigner, could possibly be the hero of ages. He believes that I have somehow tricked the philosophers, that I wear the piercings of the hero unjustly. According to Rorschach, only a Terrasman of pure blood should have been chosen as the hero. Oddly, I find myself even more determined because of his hatred. I must prove to him that I can perform this task.
It was a subdued group that returned to Clubs's shop that evening. The executions had stretched for hours. There had been no denunciations, no explanations by the Ministry or the Lord Ruler, just execution after execution after execution. Once the captives were gone, the Lord Ruler and his obligators had ridden away, leaving a pile of corpses on the platform and bloodied water running in the fountains. As Kelsier's crew returned to the kitchen, Vin realized that her headache no longer bothered her. Her pain now seemed insignificant. The bay wraps remained on the table, thoughtfully covered by one of the housemaids. No one reached for them. Kelsier took his customary place, leaning against the cupboard.
All right, let's plan this out. How should we proceed?
Doxson recovered a stack of papers from the side of the room as he walked over to seat himself.
With the garrison gone, our main focus becomes the nobility.
Indeed. If we truly intend to seize the treasury with only a few thousand soldiers, then we're certainly going to need something to distract the palace guard and keep the nobility from taking the city away from us. The house war, therefore, becomes of paramount importance.
My thoughts exactly.
But what happens when the house war is over? Some houses will come out on top, and then we'll have to deal with them.
I don't intend for the house war to ever end, Vin. Or at least not for a long while. The Lord Ruler makes dictates, and the Ministry polices his followers. But the nobility are the ones who actually force the Scar to work. So, if we bring down enough noble houses, the government may just collapse on its own. We can't fight the entire final empire as a whole. It's too big. But we might be able to shatter it, then make the pieces fight each other.
We need to put financial strain on the great houses.
Doxson flipped through his papers.
The aristocracy is primarily a financial institution, and lack of funds will bring any house down.
Breeze, we might need to use some of your aliases. So far, I've been the only one in the crew working on the house war. But if we're going to make this city snap before the garrison returns, we need to step up our efforts.
Oh, very well. We'll just have to be very careful to make certain no one accidentally recognizes me as someone I shouldn't be. I can't go to parties or functions, but I can probably do solitary house visits.
Same for you, Docs.
I figured as much.
It will be dangerous for both of you, but speed will be essential. Vin will remain our main spy and will probably want her to start spreading some bad information. Anything to make the nobility uncertain.
We should probably focus our attentions on the top, then.
Indeed. If we can make the most powerful houses look vulnerable, then their enemies will be quick to strike. Only after the powerful houses are gone will people realize that they were the ones really supporting the economy.
The room fell quiet for a second. Then several heads turned toward Vin.
What?
They're talking about House Venture, Vin. It's the most powerful of the great houses.
If Venture falls, the entire final empire would feel the tremors.
They're not all bad people.
Perhaps, but Lord Strath Venture certainly is. And his family sits at the very head of the final empire. House Venture needs to go, and you already have an in with one of its most important members.
I thought you wanted me to stay away from Elend.
Just keep your ears open, child. See if you can get the lad to talk about his house's finances. Find us a bit of leverage, and we'll do the rest.
Just like the games Elend hates so much.
However, the executions were still fresh in her mind. That sort of thing had to be stopped. Besides, even Elend said he didn't like his father or his house very much. Maybe she could find something.
I'll see what I can do.
Vin heard a knock at the front door, and a few moments later, Sazed, clad in ska cloak to hide his features, entered the kitchen. Kelsier checked the clock.
You're early, Sazed.
I tried to make it a habit, Master Kelsier.
Well, that's a habit someone else could afford to pick up.
If you're always on time, it implies that you never have anything better you should be doing. Sazed, how are the men?
As good as can be expected, Master Kelsier. But they can't hide in the Renault warehouses forever.
I know. Docs, Ham, I'll need you to work on this problem. There are 2,000 men left from our army. I want you to get them into Luthadel.
We'll find a way.
You want us to keep training them?
Kelsier nodded.
Then we'll have to hide them in squads. We don't have the resources to train men individually. Say, a couple hundred men per team? Hidden in slums near one another?
Make sure none of the teams know about the others. Or even that we still intend to strike at the palace. With that many men in town, there's a chance some of them will eventually get taken by the obligators for one reason or another.
Tell each group that it's the only one that didn't get disbanded, and that it's being retained just in case it's needed at some point in the future.
You also said that recruitment needed to be continued.
I'd like at least twice as many troops before we try and pull this off.
That's going to be tough, considering our army's failure.
What failure? Tell them the truth, that our army successfully neutralized the garrison.
Though most of them died doing it.
Now we can gloss over that part. The people will be angry at the executions. That should make them more willing to listen to us.
Gathering more troops is going to be your main task over the next few months, Ham.
That's not much time. But I'll see what I can do.
Good. Sais, did the note come?
It did, Master Kelsier.
Sazed pulled a letter from beneath his cloak and handed it to Kelsier.
And what would that be?
A message from Marsh.
Kelsier opened the letter and scanned its contents.
He's in the city, and he has news.
What news?
He doesn't say. But he gave instructions on where to meet him tonight.
Kelsier walked over, picking up a regular ska cloak.
I'm going to go scout the location before it gets dark. Coming, Vin?
She nodded, standing.
The rest of you keep working on the plan. In 2 months' time, I want this city to be so tense that when it finally breaks, even the Lord Ruler won't be able to hold it together.
There's something you're not telling us, isn't there?
Vin looked away from the window, turning toward Kelsier.
A part of the plan.
Kelsier glanced over at her in the darkness. Marsh's chosen meeting place was an abandoned building within the Twists, one of the most impoverished ska slums. Kelsier had located a second abandoned building, just across from the one they would meet in, and he and Vin waited on the top floor, watching the street for signs of Marsh.
Why do you ask me that?
Because of the Lord Ruler.
Vin picked at the rotting wood of her windowsill.
I felt his power today. I don't think the others could sense it, not like a Mistborn can. But I know you must have.
She looked up again, meeting Kelsier's eyes.
You're still planning to get him out of the city before we try to take the palace, right?
Don't worry about the Lord Ruler. The 11th Metal will take care of him.
Vin frowned. Outside, the sun was setting in a fiery blaze of frustration. The mists would come soon, and supposedly Marsh would arrive a short time later.
The 11th Metal.
Vin remembered the skepticism with which the other crew members regarded it.
Is it real?
The 11th Metal? Of course it is. I showed it to you, remember?
That's not what I mean. Are the legends real? Are you lying?
Kelsier turned toward her, frowning slightly. Then he smirked.
You're a very blunt girl, Vin.
I know.
The answer is no. I'm not lying. The legends are real, though it took some time for me to find them.
And that bit of metal you showed us really is the 11th metal?
I think so.
But you don't know how to use it.
No, I don't.
That's not very comforting.
Kelsier shrugged, turning to look out the window.
Even if I don't discover the secret in time, I doubt the Lord Ruler will be as big a problem as you think. He's a powerful allomancer, but he doesn't know everything. If he did, we'd be dead right now. He's not omnipotent either. If he were, he wouldn't have needed to execute all of those ska to try and frighten the city into submission. I don't know what he is, but I think he's more like a man than he is a god. The words in that logbook, they're the words of a regular person. His real power comes from his armies and his wealth. If we remove them, he won't be able to do anything to stop his empire from collapsing.
He might not be a god, but he is something, Kelsier. Something different. Today, when he was in the square, I could feel his touch on my emotions even when I was burning copper.
That's not possible, Vin. If it were, Inquisitors would be able to sense allomancy even when there was a smoker nearby. If that were the case, don't you think they'd hunt down all of the ska mistings and kill them?
Vin shrugged.
You know the Lord Ruler is strong, and you feel like you should still be able to sense him. So you do.
Maybe he's right. He's been an Allomancer for far longer than I have, after all. But I felt something, didn't I? And the Inquisitor that nearly killed me? Somehow he found me in the darkness and rain. He must have sensed something.
The 11th Medal. Couldn't we just try it and see what it does?
It's not that simple. You remember how I told you never to burn a medal that wasn't one of the 10?
Vin nodded.
Burning another medal can be deadly. Even getting the wrong mixture in an alloy medal can make you sick. If I'm wrong about the 11th Medal...
it'll kill you.
Kelsier nodded.
So you're not quite as certain as you pretend. Otherwise, you'd have tried it by now.
That's what you want to find in the logbook. A clue about how to use the 11th Medal.
I'm afraid we weren't very lucky in that respect. So far, the logbook hasn't even mentioned Allomancy.
Though it does talk about Ferrochemy.
Kelsier eyed her as he stood by his window, one shoulder leaning against the wall.
So Sazed told you about that?
I kind of forced him to.
Oh, I wonder what I've unleashed upon the world by teaching you Allomancy. Of course, my trainer said the same thing about me.
He was right to worry.
Of course he was.
Vin smiled. Outside, the sunlight was nearly gone, and diaphanous patches of mist were beginning to form in the air. They hung like ghosts, slowly growing larger, extending their influence as night approached.
Sazed didn't have time to tell me much about Ferrochemy. What kind of things can it do?
Ferrochemy is completely internal. It can provide some of the same things we get from pewter and tin, strength, endurance, eyesight, but each attribute has to be stored separately. It can enhance a lot of other things, too. Things that Allomancy can't do. Memory, physical speed, clarity of thought. Even some strange things like physical weight or physical age can be altered by Ferrochemy.
So it's more powerful than Allomancy?
Ferrochemy doesn't have any external powers. It can't push and pull emotions, nor can it steel push or iron pull. And the biggest limitation to Ferrochemy is that you have to store up all of its abilities by drawing them from your own body. Want to be twice as strong for a time? Well, you have to spend several hours being weak to store up the strength. If you want to store up the ability to heal quickly, you have to spend a great deal of time feeling sick. In Allomancy, the metals themselves are our fuel. We can generally keep going as long as we have enough metal to burn. In Ferrochemy, the metals are just storage devices. Your own body is the real fuel.
So you just steal someone else's storage metals, right?
Doesn't work. Ferrochemists can only access metal stores they themselves created.
Oh.
So, no, I wouldn't say that Ferrochemy is more powerful than Allomancy. They both have advantages and limitations. For instance, an Allomancer can only flare a metal so high, and so his maximum strength is bounded. Ferrochemists don't have that kind of limitation. If a ferrochemist had enough strength stored up to be twice as strong as normal for an hour, he could choose instead to be three times as strong for a shorter period of time, or even four, five, or six times as strong for even shorter periods.
That sounds like a pretty big advantage.
True.
Kelsier reached inside of his cloak and pulled out a vial containing several beads of atium.
But we have this. It doesn't matter if a ferrochemist is as strong as five men or as strong as 50 men. If I know what he's going to do next, I'll beat him.
Vin nodded.
Here.
Kelsier unstoppered the vial and pulled out one of the beads. He took out another vial, this one filled with the normal alcohol solution, and dropped the bead in it.
Take one of these. You might need it.
Tonight?
Vin accepted the vial. Kelsier nodded.
But it's just marsh.
It might be. Then again, maybe the obligators caught him and forced him to write that letter. Maybe they're following him, or maybe they've since captured him and have tortured him to find out about the meeting. Marsh is in a very dangerous place. Think about trying to do the same thing you're doing at those balls, except exchange all the noblemen for obligators and inquisitors.
I guess you have a point.
Vin tucked away the bead of atium.
You know, something must be wrong with me. I barely even stop to think how much this stuff is worth anymore.
I have trouble forgetting how much it's worth.
Vin glanced down at Kelsier's hands. He usually wore long-sleeved shirts and gloves now. His reputation was making it dangerous for his identifying scars to be visible in public. Vin knew they were there, however, like thousands of tiny white scratches layered one over the other.
Anyway, you're right about the logbook. I had hoped that it would mention the 11th metal. But allomancy isn't even mentioned in reference to ferrochemy. The two powers are similar in many respects. You'd think that he would compare them.
Maybe he worried that someone would read the book and didn't want to give away that he was an allomancer.
Maybe. It's also possible that he hadn't snapped yet. Whatever happened in those terrace mountains changed him from hero to tyrant. Maybe it also awakened his powers. We won't know, I guess, until Sayes finishes his translation.
Is he close?
Just a bit left. The important bit, hopefully. I feel a little frustrated with the text so far. The Lord Ruler hasn't even told us what he is supposed to accomplish in those mountains. He claims that he's doing something to protect the entire world, but that just might be his ego coming through.
He didn't seem very egotistical in the text to me. Kind of the opposite, actually.
Regardless, we'll know more once the last few sections are translated.
It was growing dark outside, and Vin had to turn up her tin to see properly. The street outside her window grew visible, adopting the strange mixture of shadow and luminance that was the result of tin-enhanced vision. She knew it was dark, logically, yet she could still see. Not as she did in regular light, everything was muted, but it was sight nonetheless.
How long?
Another half hour, assuming he's on time, and I doubt he will be. He is my brother, after all.
Vin nodded, shifting so that she leaned with arms crossed across the broken windowsill. Though it was a very small thing, she felt a comfort in having the atium Kelsier had given her. She paused. Thinking of atium reminded her of something important, something she'd been bothered by on several occasions.
You never taught me the 9th metal.
I told you that it wasn't very important.
Still, what is it? Some alloy of atium, I assume?
No. The last two metals don't follow the same pattern as the basic 8. The 9th metal is gold.
Gold? That's it? I could have tried it a long time ago on my own.
Assuming you wanted to. Burning gold is a somewhat uncomfortable experience.
Vin narrowed her eyes, then turned to look back out the window.
We'll see.
You're going to try it anyway, aren't you?
Vin didn't respond. Kelsier reached into his sash and pulled out a golden boxing and a phial.
You should probably get one of these.
He held up the phial.
However, if you collect the metal yourself, burn just a tiny bit first to make certain that it's pure or alloyed correctly.
If it isn't?
You'll know.
Kelsier began to file away at the coin.
Remember that headache you had from pewter dragging?
Yes.
Bad metal is worse. Far worse. Buy your metals when you can. In every city, you'll find a small group of merchants who provide powdered metals to allomancers. Those merchants have a vested interest in making certain that all of their metals are pure. A grumpy mistborn with a headache isn't exactly the kind of slighted customer one wants to deal with.
Kelsier finished filing, then collected a few flakes of gold on a small square of cloth. He stuck one on his finger, then swallowed it.
This is good.
Kelsier handed Vin the cloth.
Go ahead. Just remember, burning the 9th metal is a strange experience.
Vin nodded, suddenly feeling a bit apprehensive.
You'll never know if you don't try it for yourself.
She dumped the dust-like flakes into her mouth. She washed them down with a bit of water from her flask. A new metal reserve appeared within her, unfamiliar and different from the 9 she knew. She looked up at Kelsier and burned gold. She was in two places at once. She could see herself, and she could see herself. One of her was a strange woman, changed and transformed from the girl she had always been. That girl had been careful and cautious, a girl who would never burn an unfamiliar metal based solely on the word of one man. This woman was foolish. She had forgotten many of the things that had let her survive so long. She drank from cups prepared by others. She fraternized with strangers. She didn't keep track of the people around her. She was still far more careful than most people, but she had lost so much. The other her was something she had always secretly loathed, a child, really. Thin to the point of scrawniness, she was lonely, hateful, and untrusting. She loved no one, and no one loved her. She always told herself quietly that she didn't care. Was there something worth living for? There had to be. Life couldn't be as pathetic as it seemed. Yet, it had to be. There wasn't anything else. Vin was both. She stood in two places, moving both bodies, being both girl and woman. She reached out with hesitant, uncertain hands, one each, and touched herself on the faces, one each. And it was gone. She felt a sudden rush of emotions, a sense of worthlessness and confusion. There were no chairs in the room, so she simply squatted on the ground, sitting with her back to the wall, knees pulled up, arms wrapped around them. Kelsier walked over, squatting down, to lay a hand on her shoulder.
It's all right.
What was that?
Gold and ATM are complements, like the other metal pairs. ATM lets you see marginally into the future. Gold works in a similar way, but lets you see into the past. Or, at least, it gives you a glimpse of another version of yourself had things been different in the past.
Vin shivered. The experience of being both people at once, of seeing herself twice over, had been disturbingly eerie. Her body still shook, and her mind didn't feel right anymore. Fortunately, the sensation seemed to be fading.
Remind me to listen to you in the future, or at least when you talk about allomancy.
I tried to put it out of your mind for as long as possible, but you had to try it sometime. You'll get over it.
It's almost gone already. But it wasn't just a vision, Kelsier. It was real. I could touch her, the other me.
It may feel that way, but she wasn't here. I couldn't see her, at least. It's a hallucination.
ATM visions aren't just hallucinations. The shadows really do show what people will do.
True. I don't know. Gold is strange, Vin. I don't think anybody understands it. My trainer, Gemmel, said that a gold shadow was a person who didn't exist but could have. A person you might have become had you not made certain choices. Of course, Gemmel was a bit screwy, so I'm not sure how much I believe of what he said.
Vin nodded. However, it was unlikely that she'd find out more about gold anytime soon. She didn't intend to ever burn it again if she could help it. She continued to sit, letting her emotions recover for a while, and Kelsier moved back over by the window. Eventually, he perked up.
He's here?
You want to stay here and rest some more?
Vin shook her head.
All right, then.
Kelsier placed his pocket watch, file, and other metals on the windowsill.
Let's go.
They didn't go out the window. Kelsier wanted to maintain a low profile, though this section of the twists was so deserted that Vin wasn't sure why he bothered. They left the building via a set of untrustworthy stairs, then crossed the street. The building Marsh had chosen was even more run down than the one Vin and Kelsier had been sitting in. The front door was gone, though Vin could see remnants of it in the splintered refuse on the floor. The room inside smelled of dust and soot. A figure standing on the far side of the room spun at the sound.
It's me, and Vin.
As Vin drew closer, she could see Marsh squinting in the darkness. It was odd to watch him, feeling like she was in plain sight, yet knowing that to him, she and Kelsier were nothing more than shadows. The far wall of the building had collapsed, and mist floated freely in the room, nearly as dense as it was outside.
You have ministry tattoos.
Of course. I had to put them on before I met up with the caravan. I had to have them to play the part of an acolyte.
They weren't extensive. He was playing a low-ranked obligator, but the pattern was unmistakable. Dark lines, rimming the eyes, running outward like crawling cracks of lightning. There was one single line, much thicker and in bright red, running down the side of his face. Vin recognized the pattern. These were the lines of an obligator who belonged to the Canton of Inquisition. Marsh hadn't just infiltrated the ministry. He'd chosen the most dangerous section of it to infiltrate.
But you'll always have them. They're so distinctive. Everywhere you go, you'll be known as either an obligator or a fraud.
That was part of the price he paid to infiltrate the ministry, Vin.
It doesn't matter. I didn't have much of a life before this anyway. Look, can we hurry? I'm expected to be somewhere soon. Obligators lead busy lives, and I only have a few minutes leeway.
All right. I assume your infiltration went well, then?
It went fine. Too well, actually. I think I might have distinguished myself from the group. I assumed that I would be at a disadvantage since I didn't have the same 5 years of training that the other acolytes did. I made certain to answer questions as thoroughly as possible and to perform my duties with precision. However, I apparently know more about the Ministry than even some of its members do. I'm certainly more competent than this batch of newcomers, and the Prelans have noticed that.
You always were an overachiever.
Anyway, my knowledge, not to mention my skill as a seeker, has already earned me an outstanding reputation. I'm not sure how closely I want the Prelans paying attention to me. That background we devised begins to sound a bit flimsy when an Inquisitor is grilling you.
You told them that you're a Misting?
Of course I did. The Ministry, particularly the Canton of Inquisition, recruits nobleman seekers diligently. The fact that I'm one is enough to keep them from asking too many questions about my background. They're happy enough to have me, despite the fact that I'm a fair bit older than most acolytes.
Besides, he needed to tell them he was a Misting so that he could get into the more secretive Ministry sects. Most of the higher-ranking obligators are Mistings of one sort or another. They tend to favor their own kind.
With good reason. Kel, the Ministry is far more competent than we assumed.
What do you mean?
They make use of their Mistings. Good use of them. They have bases throughout the city. Soothing stations, as they call them. Each one contains a couple of Ministry soothers whose only duty is to extend a dampening influence around them, calming and depressing the emotions of everyone in the area.
How many?
Dozens. Concentrated in Scar sections of the city. They know that the Scar are beaten, but they want to make sure things stay that way.
Bloody hell. I always thought the Scar inside Lúthedain seemed more beaten down than others. No wonder we had so much trouble recruiting. The people's emotions are under a constant soothing.
The Ministry soothers are good, Kel. Very good. Even better than Breeze. All they do is soothe all day, every day. And since they're not trying to get you to do anything specific, instead just keeping you from extreme emotional ranges, they're very hard to notice. Each team has a smoker to keep them hidden, as well as a seeker to watch for passing allomancers. I'll bet this is where the Inquisitors get a lot of their leads. Most of our people are smart enough not to burn when they know that there's an obligator in the area, but they're more lax in the slums.
Can you get us a list of the stations? We need to know where those seekers are, Marsh.
I'll try. I'm on my way to a station right now. They always do personnel changes at night to maintain their secret. The upper ranks have taken an interest in me, and they're letting me visit some stations to become familiar with their work. I'll see if I can get a list for you.
Kelsier nodded in the darkness.
Just don't be stupid with the information, all right? We have to be careful, Kel. The Ministry has kept these stations secret for quite some time. Now that we know about them, we have a serious advantage. Don't waste it.
I won't. What about the Inquisitors? Did you find anything out about them?
They're strange, Kel. I don't know. They seem to have all of the allomantic powers, so I assume they were once Mistborn. I can't find out much else about them, though I do know that they age.
Really? So they're not immortal?
No. The obligators say that Inquisitors change occasionally. The creatures are very long-lived, but they do eventually die of old age. New ones must be recruited from nobleman ranks. They're people, Kel. They've just been changed.
If they can die of old age, then there's probably other ways to kill them too.
That's what I think. I'll see what I can find, but don't get your hopes up. The Inquisitors don't have many dealings with normal obligators. There's political tension between the two groups. The Lord Prelan leads the church, but the Inquisitors think that they should be in charge.
Interesting.
Anyway, I should go. I had to jog all the way here, and I'm going to be late getting to my appointment anyway.
Kelsier nodded, and Marsh began to move away, picking his way over the rubble in his dark obligator's robe.
Marsh.
Marsh reached the doorway and turned.
Thank you. I can only guess how dangerous this is.
I'm not doing this for you, Kel, but I appreciate the sentiment. I'll try and send you another missive once I have more information.
Be careful.
Marsh vanished out into the misty night. Kelsier stood in the fallen room for a few minutes, staring after his brother.
He wasn't lying about that either. He really does care for Marsh.
Let's go. We should get you back to Mansion Renault. House Lekal is throwing another party in a few days, and you'll need to be there.
Sometimes my companions claim that I worry and question too much. However, while I may wonder about my stature as the hero, there is one thing that I have never questioned. The ultimate good of our quest. The deepness must be destroyed. I have seen it, and I have felt it. This name we give it is too weak a word, I think. Yes, it is deep and unfathomable, but it is also terrible. Many do not realize that it is sentient, but I have sensed its mind, such that it is, the few times I have confronted it directly. It is a thing of destruction, madness, and corruption. It would destroy this world not out of spite or out of animosity, but simply because that is what it does.
Keep Lakal's ballroom was shaped like the inside of a pyramid. The dance floor was set on a waist-high platform at the very center of the room, and the dining table sat on four similar platforms surrounding it. Servants scuttled through the trenches, running between the platforms, delivering food to the dining aristocrats. Four tiers of balconies ran along the inside perimeter of the pyramidal room, each one a little closer to the point at the top, each one extending just a little bit more over the dance floor. Though the main room was well lit, the balconies themselves were shadowed by their overhangs. The design was intended to allow proper viewing of the keep's most distinctive artistic feature, the small stained glass windows that lined each balcony. Lakal nobleman bragged that while other keeps had larger windows, Keep Lakal had the most detailed ones. Vin had to admit that they were impressive. She'd seen so many stained glass windows over the last few months that she was beginning to take them for granted. Keep Lakal's windows, however, put most of them to shame. Each of these was an extravagant, detailed marvel of resplendent color. Exotic animals pranced, distant landscapes enticed, and portraits of famous noblemen sat proudly. There were also, of course, the requisite pictures dedicated to the Ascension. Vin could recognize these more easily now, and she was surprised to see references to things she had read in the logbook. The hills of emerald green, the steep mountains with faint wave-like lines coming from the tips, a deep, dark lake, and blackness. The deepness, a chaotic thing of destruction.
He defeated it, but what was it?
Perhaps the end of the logbook would reveal more. Vin shook her head, leaving the alcove and its black window behind. She strolled along the second balcony, wearing a pure white gown, an outfit she would never have been able to even imagine during her life as a ska. Ash and soot had been too much a part of her life, and she didn't think she'd even had a concept of what a pristine white looked like. That knowledge made the dress even more wondrous to her. She hoped she would never lose that, the sense within herself of how life had been before. It made her appreciate what she had so much more than the real nobility seemed to. She continued along the balcony, seeking her prey. Glittering colors shone from backlit windows, sparkling light across the floor. Most of the windows glowed inside small viewing alcoves along the balcony, and so the balcony before her was interspersed with pockets of dark and color. Vin didn't stop to study any more of the windows. She'd done quite a bit of that during her first balls at Keep Lakal. This night, she had business to attend to. She found her quarry halfway down the east balcony walkway. Lady Cliss was speaking with a group of people, so Vin paused, pretending to study a window. Cliss's group soon broke up. One could generally only take so much of Cliss at a time. The short woman began to walk along the balcony toward Vin. When she drew close, Vin turned as if in surprise.
"Why, Lady Cliss, I haven't seen you all evening. Lady Valette, you missed Lord Cape's ball last week. Not due to a relapse of your earlier malady, I hope."
"No, I spent that evening dining with my uncle."
"Oh, well, that's good.
I hear you have some interesting news about Lady Trenpedri de Luce. I myself have heard some interesting things lately."
Vin eyed Cliss, implying that she'd be willing to trade tidbits.
"Oh, that? Well, I heard that Trenpedri isn't at all interested in a union with House M, though her father is implying that there will be a wedding soon. You know how the M sons are, though.
Why, Fedrin is an absolute buffoon.
That is interesting. Perhaps Trenpedri's hesitance comes because of House M's connection to House Hastings.
Why would that be?
Well, we all know what House Hastings is planning.
We do?
Oh, perhaps that isn't known yet. Please, Lady Cliss, forget that I said anything.
Oh, forget? Why, it's already forgotten. But come now, you can't just stop. What do you mean?
Oh, I shouldn't say. It's just something I overheard my uncle talking about.
Your uncle? What did he say? You know you can trust me.
Well, he said that House Hastings was relocating a lot of resources back to its plantations in the Southern Dominance. My uncle was quite happy. Hastings has withdrawn from some of its contracts, and my uncle was hoping to get them instead.
Relocating? Why, they wouldn't do that unless they were planning to withdraw from the city.
Anyway, please, this is obviously only hearsay. You probably shouldn't tell anyone about it.
Of course. Excuse me. I need to go refresh myself.
Of course.
Vin watched the woman zip away toward the balcony stairs. She smiled. House Hastings was making no such preparations, of course. Hastings was one of the strongest families in the city and wouldn't likely withdraw. However, Doxson was back at the shop, forging documents which, when delivered to the right places, would imply that Hastings was planning to do what Vin had said. If all went well, the entire city would soon expect a Hastings withdrawal. Their allies would plan for it, and might even begin to withdraw themselves. People seeking to buy weapons would instead look other places, fearing that Hastings wouldn't be able to make good on contracts once it left. When Hastings didn't withdraw, it would make them look indecisive. Their allies gone, their income weakened, they could very well be the next house to fall. House Hastings, however, was one of the easy ones to work against. It had a reputation for extreme subterfuge, and people would believe that it was planning a secret retreat. In addition, Hastings was a strong mercantile house, meaning it depended a great deal upon its contracts to survive. A house with such an obvious dominating source of income also had an obvious weakness. Lord Hastings had worked hard to increase his house's influence over the last few decades, and in doing so, he had extended his house's resources to their limits. Other houses were far more stable. Vin turned and strolled down the walkway, eyeing the massive clock set between the balconies on either side of the chamber. Venture would not fall easily. It remained powerful through the sheer force of fortune. Though it participated in some contracts, it didn't rely on them like other houses. Venture was rich enough and powerful enough that even mercantile disaster would only jostle it. In a way, Venture's stability was a good thing, for Vin at least. The house had no obvious weaknesses, so maybe the crew wouldn't be too disappointed when she couldn't discover any way to bring it down. After all, they didn't absolutely need to destroy House Venture. Doing so would simply make the plan go more smoothly. Whatever happened, Vin had to make sure that Venture didn't suffer the same fate as House Tekiel. Their reputation destroyed, their finances unhinged, the Tekiel had tried to pull out of the city, and this final show of weakness had been too much. Some of Tekiel's nobility had been assassinated before they left. The rest had been found in the burned-out ruins of their canal boats, apparently hit by bandits. Vin, however, knew of no thieving band who would dare slaughter so many noblemen. Kelsier still hadn't been able to discover which house was behind the murders, but the Luthadel nobility didn't seem to care who the culprit was. House Tekiel had allowed itself to grow weak, and nothing was more embarrassing to the aristocracy than a great house that couldn't maintain itself. Kelsier had been right. Though polite groups met at balls, the nobility were more than willing to stab each other square in the chest if it benefited them.
Kind of like thieving crews. The nobility really aren't that different from the people I grew up around.
The atmosphere was only made more dangerous by its polite niceties. Underneath that front were plots, assassinations, and, perhaps most importantly, Mistborn. It was no accident that all of the balls she had attended recently had displayed great numbers of guards, both wearing armor and not. The parties now served the additional purpose of warning and showing strength.
Elend is safe. Despite what he thinks of his family, they've done a good job of maintaining their place in the Luthadel hierarchy. He's the heir. They'll protect him from assassins.
She wished those assertions sounded just a bit more convincing. She knew that Shan Alariel was planning something. House Venture might be safe, but Elend himself was a little bit oblivious sometimes. If Shan did something against him personally, it might or might not be a major blow against House Venture, but it would certainly be a major blow against Vin.
Lady Valette Renault, I do believe that you're late.
Vin turned to see Elend lounging in an alcove to her left. She smiled, glancing down at the clock, noticing that it was indeed a few minutes past the time when she had promised to meet him.
I must be picking up bad habits from some friends of mine.
Vin stepped into the alcove.
Now, see, I didn't say it was a bad thing. Why, I'd say that it is a lady's courtly duty to be a bit dilatory. It does a gentleman good to be forced to wait upon a woman's whims. Or so my mother was always fond of telling me.
It sounds like she was a wise woman.
The alcove was just large enough for two people standing sideways. She stood across from him, the balcony overhang a short distance to her left, a marvelous lavender window to her right, their feet nearly touching.
Oh, I don't know about that. She married my father, after all.
Thereby joining the most powerful house in the Final Empire. You can't do much better than that. Though I suppose she could have tried to marry the Lord Ruler. Last I knew, though, he wasn't in the market for a wife.
Pity. Maybe he'd look a little less depressed if there were a woman in his life.
Guess that would depend on the woman.
Vin glanced to the side as a small group of courtgoers strolled past.
You know, this isn't exactly the most private location. People are giving us odd looks.
You're the one who stepped in here with me.
Yes, well, I wasn't thinking about the gossip we might start.
Let it start.
Because it will make your father angry?
I don't care about that anymore, Valette.
Elend took a step forward, bringing them even closer. Vin could feel his breath.
I think I'm going to kiss you.
I don't think you want to do that, Elend.
Why?
How much do you really know about me?
Not as much as I'd like to.
Not as much as you need to, either.
Vin looked up into his eyes.
So tell me.
I can't. Not right now.
Elend stood for a moment, then nodded slightly and pulled away. He walked out onto the balcony walkway.
So, shall we go for a stroll, then?
Yes.
Vin was relieved, yet just a bit disappointed as well.
It's for the best. That alcove has absolutely terrible reading light.
Don't you dare.
Vin eyed the book in his pocket as she joined him on the walkway.
Read when you're with someone else, not me.
But that's how our relationship began.
And that's how it could end, too.
Vin took his arm. Elend smiled. They weren't the only couple walking the balcony, and down below, other pairs spun slowly to the music.
It seems so peaceful. Yet, just a few days ago, many of these people stood and watched idly as women and children were beheaded.
She felt Ellen's arm, his warmth beside her. Kelsier said that he smiled so much because he felt he needed to take what joy he could in the world, to relish the moments of happiness that seemed so infrequent in the Final Empire. Strolling for a time beside Elend, Vin thought she was beginning to understand how Kelsier felt.
Valette.
What?
I want you to leave Luthadel.
What?
He paused, turning to look at her.
I've thought about this a lot. You may not realize it, but the city is becoming dangerous. Very dangerous.
I know.
Then you know that a small house without allies has no place in the Central Dominance right now. Your uncle was brave to come here and try to establish himself, but he chose the wrong time. I think things are going to get out of hand here very soon. When that happens, I can't guarantee your safety.
My uncle knows what he's doing, Elend.
This is different, Valette. Entire houses are falling. The Tekiel family wasn't slaughtered by bandits. That was the work of House Hasting. Those won't be the last deaths we see before this is through.
Vin thought of Shan again.
But you're safe, right? House Venture, it's not like the others. It's stable.
We are even more vulnerable than the rest, Valette.
But your fortune is large. You don't depend on contracts.
They may not be visible, but they're there, Valette. We put on a good show. And the others assume that we have more than we do. However, with the Lord Ruler's house taxings, well, the only way we maintain so much power in this city is through income. Secret income.
Vin frowned and Elend leaned closer.
My family mines the Lord Ruler's ATM, Valette. That's where our wealth comes from. In a way, Our stability depends almost completely on the Lord Ruler's whims. He doesn't like to bother collecting the ATM himself, but he gets very perturbed if the delivery schedule is disrupted.
Find out more. This is the secret. This is what Kelsier needs.
Oh, Ellen, you shouldn't be telling me this.
Why not? I trust you. Look, you need to understand how dangerous things are. The ATM supply has been having some troubles lately, ever since... Well, something happened a few years ago. Ever since then, things have been different. My father can't meet the Lord Ruler's quotas, and the last time that happened...
What?
Well, let's just say that things could soon grow very bad for the Venturers. The Lord Ruler depends on that ATM valet. It's one of the prime ways he controls the nobility. A house without ATM is a house that can't defend itself from Mistborn. By keeping a large reserve, the Lord Ruler controls the market, making himself very wealthy. He funds his armies by making ATM scarce, then selling extra bits for lavish amounts. If you knew more about the economics of Allomancy, this would probably make a lot more sense to you.
Oh, trust me, I understand more than you think. And now I know far more than I should.
Ellen paused, smiling pleasantly as an obligator strolled along the balcony walkway beside them. The obligator looked them over as he passed, eyes thoughtful within their web of tattoos. Ellen turned back to her as soon as the obligator had passed.
I want you to leave. People know that I've paid attention to you. Hopefully they'll assume it was just to spite my father, but they could still try to use you. The great houses wouldn't have any qualms about crushing your entire family just to get at me and my father. You have to go.
I'll think about it.
There isn't much time left for thinking. I want you to leave before you get too involved with what's going on in this city.
I'm already involved so much more than you think.
I said I'd think about it. Look, Ellen, I think you should be more worried about yourself. I think Shan Alariel is going to try something to strike against you.
Shan? She's harmless.
I don't think she is, Ellen. You need to be more careful.
Look at us. Each one trying to convince the other how dreadfully dire the situation is. Each one bullheadedly refusing to listen to the other.
Vin paused, then smiled.
You're not going to listen to me, are you? Is there anything I can do to make you leave?
Not right now. Look, Ellen, can't we just enjoy the time we have together? If things continue as they are, we might not have many more opportunities like this for a while.
He paused, then finally nodded. She could see he was still troubled, but he did turn back to their walk, letting her gently take his arm again as they strolled. They walked together for a time, silent, until something drew Vin's attention. She removed her hands from his arm, instead reaching down to take his hand in her own. He glanced at her, frowning in confusion as she tapped the ring on his finger.
It really is metal.
Pure gold.
Don't you worry about
it. Allomancers? I don't know. They're not the sort of thing that I've ever had to deal with. You don't wear metal out on the plantations?
Vin shook her head, tapping one of the barrettes in her hair.
Painted wood.
Probably wise. But, well, the longer you stay here in Luthadel, the more you'll realize that little we do here is done in the name of wisdom. The Lord Ruler wears metal rings, and so, therefore, does the nobility. Some philosophers think that's all part of his plan. The Lord Ruler wears metal because he knows that the nobility will mimic him and therefore give his inquisitors power over them.
Do you agree?
Vin took his arm again as they walked.
With the philosophers, I mean?
No. The Lord Ruler, he's just arrogant. I've read of warriors long ago who would run into battle without armor on, supposedly to prove how brave and strong they were. That's how this is, I think. Although admittedly on a far more subtle level. He wears metal to flaunt his power, to show how unfrightened, how unthreatened he is by anything we could do to him.
Well, he's willing to call the Lord Ruler arrogant. Perhaps I can get him to admit a little more.
Ellen paused, glancing over at the clock.
I'm afraid we don't have a whole lot of time tonight, Villette.
That's right. You'll need to go off and meet with your friends.
She glanced at him, trying to gauge his reaction.
He didn't seem very surprised.
Indeed, I will. You're very observant.
It doesn't take much observing. Any time where it keeps Hastings, Venture, Lacalle, or Alariel, you run off with the same people.
My drinking friends. An unlikely group in today's political climate, but one that helps annoy my father.
What do you do at these meetings?
We talk philosophy, mostly. We're kind of a stuffy lot. Which isn't too surprising, I guess, if you know any of us. We talk about the government, about politics, about the Lord Ruler.
What about him?
Well, we don't like some of the things he's done with the Final Empire.
So you do want to overthrow him?
Overthrow him? What gave you that idea, Valette? He's the Lord Ruler. He's God. We can't do anything about him being in charge.
Elend looked away as they continued to walk.
No, my friends and I, we just wish the Final Empire could be a little different. We can't change things now, but maybe someday, assuming we all survive the next year or so, we'll be in positions to influence the Lord Ruler.
To do what?
Well, take those executions a few days ago. I don't see that they did any good. The Ska rebelled. In reprisal, the Ministry executed a few hundred random people. What is that going to do besides make the populace even more angry? So next time, the rebellion will be bigger. Does that mean that the Lord Ruler will order more people beheaded? How long can that continue before there just aren't any Ska left?
And what would you do, Alan Venture, if you were in charge?
I don't know. I've read a lot of books, some that I'm not supposed to, and I haven't found any easy answers. I'm pretty certain, however, that beheading people won't solve anything. The Lord Ruler has been around for a long time. You'd think that he'd have found a better way. But anyway, we'll have to continue this later.
Ellen slowed, turning to look at her.
Oh, time already?
I promised I'd meet them, and they kind of looked to me. I suppose I could tell them I'll be late.
Go drink with your friends. I'll be fine. I have a few more people I need to talk to anyway.
She did need to get back to work. Breeze and Doxson had spent hours planning and preparing the lies that she was supposed to spread, and they would be waiting for her report back at Clubs's shop after the party.
Maybe I shouldn't worry about you so much. Who knows? Considering all of your political maneuvering, maybe House Renault will soon be the power in town, and I'll just be a lowly beggar.
Vin smiled, and he bowed, winking at her, then was off toward the stairs. Vin walked slowly over to the balcony railing, looking down at the people dancing and dining below.
So he's not a revolutionary. Kelsier was right, again. I wonder if he ever gets tired of that.
But still, she couldn't feel too disappointed with Elend. Not everyone was so insane that they'd think to overthrow their god emperor. The mere fact that Elend was willing to think for himself set him apart from the rest. He was a good man, one who deserved a woman who was worthy of his trust. Unfortunately, he had Vin.
So House Venture secretly mines the Lord Ruler's atium. They must be the ones who administer the Pits of Hathsin.
It was a frighteningly precarious position for a house to be in. Their finances depended directly on pleasing the Lord Ruler. Elend thought that he was being careful, but Vin was worried. He wasn't taking Shan Alariel seriously enough. Of that, Vin was certain. She turned, walking intently from the balcony and down to the main floor. She found Shan's table easily. The woman always sat with a large group of attendant noblewomen, presiding like a lord over his plantation. Vin paused. She'd never approached Shan directly. Someone, however, needed to protect Elend. He was obviously too foolish to do it himself. Vin strode forward. Shan's terraceman studied Vin as she approached. He was so different from Sazed. He didn't have the same spirit. This man maintained a flat expression like some creature carved of stone. A few of the ladies shot disapproving glances toward Vin, but most of them, Shan included, ignored her. Vin stood awkwardly beside the table, waiting for a lull in the conversation. There was none. Finally, she just took a few steps closer to Shan.
Lady Shan?
Shan turned with an icy glare.
I didn't send for you, country girl.
Yes, but I found some books like you.
I no longer require your services.
Shan turned away.
I can deal with Elend Venture on my own. Now be a good little twit and stop bothering me.
But your plan, I
said that you are no longer needed. You think I was harsh on you before, girl? That was when you were on my good side. Try annoying me now.
Vin wilted reflexively before the woman's demeaning gaze. She seemed disgusted, angry even, jealous?
She must have figured it out. She finally realized that I'm not just playing with Elend. She knows that I care for him and doesn't trust me to keep her secrets.
Vin backed away from the table. Apparently, she would have to use other methods to discover Shan's plans. Despite what he often said, Elend Venture did not consider himself to be a rude man. He was more of a verbal philosopher. He liked to test and turn conversation to see how people would react. Like the great thinkers of old, he pushed boundaries and experimented with unconventional methods.
Of course.
Elend held his cup of brandy up before his eyes, inspecting it musingly.
Most of those old philosophers were eventually executed for treason.
Not exactly the most successful role models. His evening political conversation with his group was finished, and he had retired with several friends to Keep Lacal's Gentleman's Lounge, a small chamber adjacent to the ballroom. It was furnished in deep green colors, and the chairs were comfortable. It would have been a nice place to read, had he been in a slightly better mood. Jasts sat across from him, puffing contentedly on his pipe. It was good to see the young Lacal looking so calm. These last few weeks had been difficult for him.
House war? What terrible timing. Why now? Things were going so well.
Teldon returned with a refilled drink a few moments later.
You know, any one of the servants in here would have brought you a new drink.
I felt like stretching my legs.
He settled into the third chair.
And you flirted with no less than three women on your way back. I counted.
Teldon smiled, sipping his drink. The large man never just sat. He lounged. Teldon could look relaxed and comfortable no matter what the situation, his sharp suits and well-styled hair enviably handsome.
Maybe I should pay just a little more attention to things like that. Valette suffers my hair the way it is, but would she like it better if I had it styled?
Elend often intended to make his way to a stylist or tailor, but other things tended to steal his attention. He'd get lost in his studies or spend too long reading and then find himself late for his appointments. Again.
Elend is quiet this evening.
Though other groups of gentlemen sat in the dim lounge, the chairs were spread out enough to allow for private conversations.
He's been like that a lot lately.
Ah, yes.
Now, see, why must people be like this? If you have something to say, why not simply say it?
Politics, my friend. We are, if you haven't noticed, noblemen.
Elend rolled his eyes.
All right, I'll say it.
Jasts ran his hand through his hair, a nervous habit that Elend was sure contributed somewhat to the young man's growing baldness.
You've been spending a lot of time with that Renault girl, Elend.
Mm-hmm. There is a simple explanation for that. You see, I happen to like her.
Not good, Elend. Not good.
Why? You seem pleased enough to ignore class variances yourself, Teldon. I've seen you flirt with half the serving girls in the room.
I'm not heir to my house.
And these girls are trustworthy. My family hired these women. We know their houses, their backgrounds, and their allegiances.
What are you implying?
Something strange about that girl, Elend.
She got too close to you too quickly, Elend. She wants something.
Like what?
Elend, you can't just avoid the game by saying you don't want to play. It'll find you. Renault moved into town just as house tensions began to rise, and he brought with him an unknown scion. A girl who immediately began to woo the most important and available young man in Luthadel. Doesn't that seem odd to you?
Actually, I approached her first. If only because she had stolen my reading spot.
But you have to admit, it's suspicious how quickly she latched onto you. If you're going to dabble with romance, Elend, you need to learn one thing. You can play with women if you want to, but don't let yourself get too close to them. That's where the trouble starts.
Valette is different.
The other two shared a look. Then Teldon shrugged, turning back to his drink. Jast, however, stood and stretched.
Anyway, I should probably be going.
One more drink.
You know how my parents are on ball nights. If I don't go out and bid farewell at least to some of the guests, I'll be nagged about it for weeks.
The younger man wished them good night, walking back toward the main ballroom. Teldon sipped his drink, eyeing Elend.
I'm not thinking about her.
What then?
The meeting tonight. I'm not sure if I like how it went.
Ugh, you're getting just as bad as Jast. What happened to the man who attended these meetings just to relax and enjoy time with his friends?
He's worried. Some of his friends might end up in charge of their houses sooner than he expected, and he's worried that none of us are ready.
Don't be so melodramatic. I have a feeling that this is all just going to blow over. In a few months, we'll look back and wonder what all the fretting was about.
Kael Tekiel won't look back.
The conversation waned, however, and Teldon eventually excused himself. Ellen sat for a while longer, opening the Dictates of Society for another read. But he had trouble concentrating. He turned the cup of brandy in his fingers, but didn't drink much.
I wonder if Valette's out yet.
Ellen tried to find her once his meeting was over, but apparently she'd been in a private gathering of her own.
That girl is far too interested in politics for her own good.
Perhaps he was just jealous. Only a few months in court, and she already seemed to be more competent than he was. She was so fearless, so bold, so interesting. She didn't fit any of the courtly stereotypes he'd been taught to expect.
Could just be right. She certainly is different from other women, and she did imply that there were things about her I didn't know.
Ellen pushed the thought out of his mind. Valette was different, true, but she was also innocent, in a way. Eager, full of wonder and spunk. He worried about her. She obviously didn't know how dangerous Luthadel could be. There was so much more to politics in the city than simple parties and petty intrigues. What would happen if someone decided to send a Mistborn to deal with her and her uncle? Renault was poorly connected, and none of the court's members would blink twice at a few assassinations in Felice. Did Valette's uncle know how to take the proper precautions? Did he even worry about Allomancers? He'd just have to make certain that Valette left the area. That was the only option.